Welcome to Ahead of the Game, a podcast brought to you by the Digital Marketing Institute. I'm your host, Will Francis, and today we're welcoming back Cathal Mullin, our go-to analytics expert, as well as the DMI's very own Head of Digital Marketing, Sean McKenna, to talk about Google Analytics 4. The conversation around GA4 has ramped up recently as the July 1st deadline to transition approaches, and many in marketing are still getting their heads around it. So this episode is just the start of our deep dive into it here at the DMI. To get the full story, check out our intensive training series with four individual sessions starting Wednesday, June the 7th with Cathal. You'll master GA4 in just 4 hours, coming away knowing what everything does and how to get the most out of it. Podcast listeners enjoy a special discount using the code DMIPOD. That's DMIPOD. Anyway, on with the podcast. Cathal, Sean, welcome. How are you doing?
Good. Hey, Will. How are you?
Very good, thanks. How's things, Sean?
Great. All good here. Thank you so much.
Very good. Okay, look, do you know what? Before we get going, I would just love to hear, just in your work, have you transitioned to GA4 yet? And when did you do it, Cathal?
Yeah, so actually, yes. When GA4 was launched back in 2020, I put it on all my client websites. Didn't know how to use it, thought it would be amazing immediately, realized that the UI was quite different, looked really different. The whole look and feel was different. So it was just kind of sitting on my clients' websites, recording data for, 2 years or so. And then on January 1st of this year, I just cut the cord and said, yeah, we're using GA4 as our reporting standard now. And we're 6 months in today.
Great. And how are you finding it?
It is definitely different. And admittedly, I do sometimes go back to Universal Analytics to make sure that the data within a variance. So, for example, my e-commerce clients, there's just differences in revenue, and sometimes it can be a couple of thousand euros or dollars or something like that. And I know there's a discrepancy. So just for the past couple of weeks and stuff like that, I've been going back into Universal Analytics and just making sure that the discrepancy isn't too much. And just, it's a trust but verify kind of thing. But so apart from that, I'm finding it good, but just still there's a little bit of nerves around, is the data as valid as Universal Analytics really? And for the most part it is, but trust but verify.
Interesting. We'll get into that a bit more. Sean, have you transitioned yet? And what are you doing with it?
We have, yeah. So similar to Cathal, I think it was GA4 became publicly available in October 2020. I think we kind of took a similar route of just making sure everything was tracking, and we were kind of picking up data there from kind of late 2020. And since then, we've really just kind of been using both platforms, really, more so Universal Analytics, admittedly, but really just making sure that all of the metrics in there are as kind of reliable as we can get them. As Cathal mentioned, that they're within a variance. I think Google's current recommendation is around 15%. We've been seeing, depending on what we're looking at, maybe a variance of between 5-10%. So it's not too bad, but it's definitely something new and kind of something that we've been getting used to over the last kind of 18 months.
Is there any explanation from Google why there is that variance?
I think the biggest thing is just how it's being tracked. UA was always primarily session-based. Now, obviously, with GA4, we're moving over to events. Universal Analytics always had event-based tracking, but there is a little bit of kind of duplication. And depending on your setup, the variance can really be different. So just how you're really tracking that, how kind of clean your code is, the order in which it's being tagged through GTM and being sent over to Google itself, there's always going to be a little bit of a discrepancy there.
Yeah, because Cathal, am I right in thinking it's totally different technology? It's like installing like a whole new tracking technology into your website, right?
Yeah, like that's the thing. It's a totally different way of looking at data. And with that, you're not going to get the same numbers because they're not focused on the same numbers. They're not focused on the same type of reporting. So it's just about that tolerance level, like, and what you're willing to kind of give up to the gods in terms of discrepancies. And if it's within that 10% range, it doesn't matter when you're small, but it does matter at scale.
Okay. And in terms of actually using it on a day-to-day basis within the DMI Sean, like, what are the big differences, you know, in terms of how you hunt down the insights and the answers that you're looking for?
Really, we've kind of went from being a interface kind of focused team here to a customer rapport focused team. And that's the one thing we've definitely found when we've moved over to GA4 recently. It's just we need to have custom reports for everything that we would have previously looked at in Universal Analytics, and then also all the new stuff that GA4 offers. So there's a lot of predictive modeling in there, which we've kind of been utilizing and dipping our feet in recently, which previously wasn't available. But really, it's kind of moving to that custom report focus instead of just kind of browsing the interface and browsing the kind of out-of-the-box reports that were so commonplace amongst Universal Analytics users.
Interesting. So yes, you're finding that the stuff in the report section is not doing it for you. And is it the explorations that you're building, where you're building custom dashboards to answer a specific question every week, you know, and show you specific types of data each week or month or whenever you check in on it?
Yeah, exactly. Kind of even day, every day to an extent. But
give me some examples of that. What are some of those explorations telling you?
So a lot of it would be kind of defaulting back to the experience that we would have gotten in Universal Analytics and the kind of metrics that were as commonplace there. In the current default out-of-the-box standard reports that you'd get with GA4, they don't really offer as much insight and as much granularity in terms of what you maybe would have been used to seeing. So kind of front of house with Universal Analytics, this could be things like conversion rates, it could be things like Google Ads specific metrics, but cost and media and conversion return and everything there. It's a little bit easier for us, I think, just to have the custom reports to kind of duplicate that experience to what we would have gotten with Universal Analytics. And then it kind of makes it easier if we're taking that data offline and putting it into things like Looker Studio or other kind of visual dashboards that we'd have. It really allows us to kind of make that transition between Universal Analytics and GA4 a bit more seamless in terms of the data that we get.
Yes. What about your clients, Cahill? Like, they're obviously come to expect certain metrics and you know, certain types of reports from you. And then from the 1st of January, yes, you're trying to cover all that. You're trying to mimic what you were doing with Universal Analytics to some extent. Is that right?
Yeah, and it kind of feeds into what John was saying there. So, like, a lot of the time, my main reports that I would have used in Universal Analytics, I just recreated them as explorations in GA4. Now, admittedly, not every single one of the kind of metric combinations are available in GA4. But, you know, that's the thing. Part of the job is explaining why things are important. As part of the transition and explanation to my clients, what I said was metrics are going to change. We've had this on our site for the past 2 years. I'm going to filter out the metrics that are not as important that you would have seen in the old Universal Analytics reports, like bounce rate, which is not so much of an important metric because bounce rate is so subjective. About explaining that, but really building off what was familiar and recreating those familiar reports that we would have had in Universal Analytics as explorations was the first step, I suppose, to explaining to our clients, you know, what the new experience is going to look like.
Yeah. You know, in UA, you could create custom dashboards, and I like those. You could sort of have, I think it was 12 or 14 widgets, couldn't you, in one place, and you could email them and PDF them and stuff. And you could share, you could find other people's templates for dashboards and use them. You can't do that with explorations, can you? Because it feels like it should be there because there are starter templates when you start building them, but
there's another thing. So there is a hidden. So the thing with GA4 is there's loads of features, but it's not very intuitive and a lot of them are hidden. So what you can do is you can take a report like your acquisition overview report. And in the top right, there's an edit function. And then you can kind of add new widgets, move widgets around like you would do with your Universal Analytics report, and then save that into your what's called your reporting library, which is accessed in the bottom left corner. See, none of it's intuitive.
Oh, so, you know, like you're talking about the overview, like when you go to the acquisition section, that overview screen, that's actually an editable dashboard of widgets, essentially.
That's an, exactly. And you can save it into your library. And then when you access your library, you are then able to add that to your left side navigation menu. So you might remember in Universal Analytics, all the reports were down the left hand side. And in GA4, there's not a lot of reports on the left hand side. But the left-hand side of GA4 is editable. They're called collections, and you can drag whatever custom report, exploration, overview, dashboard, any of that stuff into that for quick navigation. Like, if you wanted, you could rename all of your different areas of GA4 the same as Universal Analytics.
Yeah, you could almost recreate UA for just for old time's sake.
If you're feeling nostalgic, you could definitely do it. But I do know what you mean. The dashboards are great. It's not a function it's not called a dashboard in GA4, but you can do it for all intents and purposes.
I see. So what's the difference between that and explorations? Explorations are obviously for much finer slicing and dicing of very specific combinations of very specific dimensions and metrics, isn't it?
So I really like explorations. Explorations are what made me make my peace with GA4. We were finding it tough at the start. I was like, why is none of my reports here? But what explorations allow you to do is dive into reports in very kind of unique ways. So, for example, the funnel exploration report, you can set, you know, say you're an e-commerce site. You can say your homepage is the first step, and then the next page is your e-commerce page, and then the next page is your product page, then the next page is your purchase page, your checkout, etc. That's what you would have done, say, in Universal Analytics. With GA4, you can go, people can look at a product page, they can look at a video, which is not a page. It's an interaction, it's an event. They can add an item to cart, which is not a page, it's an event. They can do a number of things in the funnel, the exploration funnel report. It's really, really easy to do once you get the hang of it. You know, but when you open up a funnel, it says, what are the steps of the funnel? And you just choose a combination of pages and events as the steps in your funnel. The great thing about it is it's non-linear. So if someone starts the checkup but jumps back out and jumps back in and jumps back out, it still records it. It records in this kind of like, and that was it. I can see everyone and thinking everyone's nodding here. When I realized that, that's what made me jump over to GA4. I was like, this is amazing. This is actually an amazing, amazing tool because it allows you to track people in a non-linear way, based on not just looking at a page, but doing stuff on that page. And it doesn't have to happen A, B, C, D. It can go, you know, add to cart, watch a video, exit the site, come, you know, number of different things like that. And it will still kind of record that. So that's one exploration. Then there's the Venn diagram, which is the overlaps, where you can see what combination of people are mobile users and in the UK. Or, you know, and these visualizations in the exploration area are great. They're great, like, I suppose, features of GA4. It's just they're not that intuitive. And they've done a terrible thing, which is when you open up explorations, it says, what kind of exploration do you want? And it lists them all off. Funnel, user, all that stuff. They're all predefined templates and they're all terrible. Before that predefined template, it says freeform. If you click the freeform option and then you choose from the drop-down funnel or user or something, you start off with a blank template and you can choose what metrics, because when you open the predefined templates, there's loads of metrics and dimensions and all this stuff in there. And you're like, am I meant to use these? Are these good?
Yeah, that's exactly how I felt about it. That's really good advice, actually. So forget the templates, just go freeform.
Freeform all the way.
It's not rocket science, is it? You can see what all the options are and just play around with it, I suppose.
The templates are such a curveball because you're like, there's a load of metrics in here. Am I meant to use these? What's this all about? You know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But really doing explorations on things like funnels and stuff isn't, like, what tipped me over to really yeah. like a GA4.
Okay, cool. So you've made your peace with it. Sean, have you made your peace with it? And what were the kind of moments where you thought, do you know what, I can go with this?
Very similar to Cahill. I think with the freeform reports in particular, a lot of what I do and a lot of what I kind of look at on a daily basis would really be table based. Again, probably bringing it back a little bit too much to the typical Universal Analytics experience, but it wouldn't be so much the funnels to an extent if we're looking at just channel based information. It'd be more so the tables. So having that free kind of freeform capability to go in and just create a kind of basic tabled reports with the data that you want based on what you would have looked at previously would be where I kind of found out, okay, this isn't too different. I'm able to actually create what we had previously, and I'm able to get the same insights, if not more, through some more customization capabilities within the explorations feature.
Yeah. And, you know, of course, the Digital Marketing Institute is a membership-based business organization. So retention is probably quite important to you, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And that seems to be more of a thing that seems to be more prominent in GA4. How have you found that?
So one of the big things that's kind of new with GA4 in particular is the predictive models. And one of the things that they have in there is churn probability. So that would be pretty important for an organization like ours, where we would have people who might purchase a course once off. They might study a course with us for 6 months and they might become a member. They might not become a member. Stuff like that would be important for us just in terms of seeing where the drop-off points are, how common they are, what's causing them, and also the impact that it has on revenue. So that kind of churn probability report works off the conversion values that you'd set up on the back of the GA4 interface, so you can actually see what that means in terms of real-time revenue for your business. That would typically and previously have been a little bit of a deep dive for us as a business to kind of get to. So that gives us a little bit more of an expedited way to kind of get those insights and see what that lifetime is like for the user, because it's all LTV based, it's all lifetime value. That's a big move now coming to GA4 versus Universal Analytics. So it's another metric.
And is it forecasting? Is it actually forecasting, or is it using all existing data?
I think currently there's a forecasting model which is built on your previous 28 days worth of data, whether that's conversions or just normal events or page views or whatever it might be. And then you can forecast forward for 28 days based on a previous 28 days. I believe you need to have a minimum of 1,000 conversion events within the period for it to be kind of reliable and effective, however.
Interesting. And of course, thinking about this retention and membership angle, engagement's important. You know, there's obviously the members area and there's lots of stuff there and you want people to hang around on the website. And we saw, like Carl said, we don't have bounce rate anymore, but we do have engagement time, engagement rate. How have you reconciled that jump from, firstly, is bounce rate just the inverse of engagement rate? That's what I've assumed, or no, what? No, sort of.
Bounce rate is a negative metric. It's the percentage of people who leave without looking at any other thing.
But if I had a 20% bounce rate, surely I have an 80% engagement rate now in GA4, don't I? No?
I suppose in simple terms, that's what they're going for. They're trying to present positive metrics. Engagement rate is measured in the sense that, like, people have to be on a page for a second or something like that, or 2 seconds. It's an engagement in by the terminology is actually quite limited. It's not like they scrolled to 50% of the page and clicked on 10 different elements. It's actually quite light what they record as a engagement. So there's a little bit of...
And what was a bounce, just to clarify?
So a bounce was someone who basically left the website without looking at any other page.
They didn't interact with the page.
They could have interacted with the page. See, Universal Analytics didn't really record that. If you know what I mean, it just recorded were they on a page or not. So they might have gone to the contact page and then filled out your form and then press submit. And if you don't have a thank you page, they're still on the same page. But that counts as a bounce, even though they've done the thing you want them to do.
Okay, so engagement rate is sort of an inverse metric there, right? Okay. And just to finish with you, Sean, thinking about this retention and engagement thing, how have you explained these new reporting standards to senior stakeholders there at the DMI?
Well, it's a net positive, right? Just in terms of the kind of metrics that we'd have there now versus what we would have had previously with UA. There's no need for maybe as much of a third-party tool, although they're good to have, like clarity and stuff like that, which you might have, but it just gives us more to look at. And it really depends on the events that you set up yourself. There's a lot of default events in there just from an engagement point of view, like scroll, first visits, different kind of user engagements depending on the assets on the page. But if you kind of use those in conjunction with custom events, then you're able to get some more kind of insights out of what's really happening on your landing pages.
And has it given you new insight into how people are interacting with your courses, the actual course itself, the course material, or were you already tracking that with a different tool?
We were already tracking a lot of that. Some of it was through GA. We'd be using the likes of average session duration to determine the progress that individuals might make it through specific modules, or bounce rate, as Cahill mentioned, in order to kind of determine where people were going after they'd started an individual module. But there is a good bit in there just in terms of the scroll metrics, and whether it was their kind of first visit metrics and stuff like that, that weren't really as available in UA on the front end as much, which now kind of tells a little bit more about how our students are engaging with our content.
Yes. Yes. It's nice to have that engagement, those engagement events for sure. I've definitely benefited from that myself. And what about you, Cahill? You work with e-commerce clients. Is lifetime value become a more prominent part of the conversation with them?
It hasn't yet with my clients, because a lot of the e-commerce integrations with Google Analytics 4 kind of only came on stream in the past couple of months, you know? So there's not a lot of historical data for e-commerce in GA4, because...
You mean like Shopify being able to actually run...
Well, yeah. So, for example, Shopify, Woo, you know, it like WooCommerce, all that stuff. A lot of them didn't have integrations. Now they do now, but you know, they're kind of fairly recent. So we don't have lots and lots of historical data to go off. And the thing about lifetime value is, a lot of like some products might be one purchase per year, two purchases per year. You know, like it's like I don't have like the FMCG kind of clients where there's lots of stuff going out the door very quickly. So I don't have enough data at this stage to make a meaningful kind of analysis using the lifetime value data in GA4. Plus, you do need to have some integrations with GA4 and your website for it to fully work. So for a lot of e-commerce clients, you do like things like store login and client login. You know, when you sign into your account for your GA, for your Shopify or whatever like that. So if I'm a customer, I sign into my customer account, and that kind of pings stuff back to my customer ID that is stored in GA4. And without that kind of connection, the report's kind of, it's lame, it's limp. It doesn't work, you know. So you need a good bit of scale. I haven't seen anything with it yet. I know what it can do. It's whether we build up enough scale over the next year or two to actually make it worthwhile. But like Universal Analytics before it, there's loads of rubbish reports in GA4, and there's loads of rubbish reports in Universal Analytics. So, you know, it may work for non-e-commerce, but it doesn't really work for e-commerce yet.
Okay, interesting. Do you think to get the most out of it, you kind of have to get into creating custom events through Google Tag Manager?
You have to do that, but also you have to do things that are a little bit beyond my understanding, which is setting up things like customer ID cookies and customer ID notifications from your e-commerce store login back to GA4, possibly via Google Tag Manager and things like that. Because part of Google Analytics 4 is this audience signals thing. Audience signals is built around customer IDs. Customer IDs are unique, and we need to have that set up on the website side or the mobile app side to then fully utilize it from the GA4 side. And that's a little bit of a chasm for me and certainly my clients, that we haven't had the ability to match up customer IDs on the website side to the customer IDs on the GA4 side.
Yeah, I couldn't get my head around that. Sean, do you know anything about that? Are you doing anything with customer IDs?
A bit, and it kind of depends on what we can capture via cookies, to be honest. We would have different user profiles, which would be kind of measured through kind of different platforms that we'd use, like Moopra, or passing stuff into our data lake, like page visit information and everything down to the individual URL that people are engaging with and scroll depth and all that stuff. We would then pass a lot of that back through to GA4 just via our standard GTM.
So when you set it up, yes, you're offered the ability to switch on Google Signals. Can anyone explain the ramifications of that and what that means?
Yeah, so Google Signals uses things like, you know, the black box machine learning within GA4. It uses probably all of the data from Google's kind of wider data ecosystem. It uses, like, you know, the way the tool was built. It uses cookies, and it also uses these customer ID things. So customer IDs are, it's quite complex. I don't fully understand that we're getting into the world of coding now and website developer stuff. And this is one of the drawbacks of GA4 is that it presents itself as simplifying things like tracking non-cookies and all that stuff. But you do need to have a certain level of technical integration between whatever your UI is, a mobile app or your website, and GA4 via this customer ID notion, which is just a little bit beyond me. Now, admittedly, there is a customer ID applied to everyone when they access your website via GA4, but you then have to marry that customer ID up with your own first-party tracking on your website for GA4 to fully work. That's why a lot of the audience signal features aren't available for smaller clients and low-traffic clients, because it's really, really hard stuff. It's really hard stuff. You know, it's beyond the standard, you know, kind of skill level of your digital marketer when you're doing this kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah, that is a challenge, isn't it? I think it does feel like a very technical product, even when you go through the kind of idiot-proof setup assistant. I'm showing people how to set it up, and I can tell that a lot of it's going over their heads. Some of it goes over my head, and clearly everyone, your head as well. You know,
yeah,
clearly
that's the thing. You
it's
know,
just you know, it's not something we're used to. So that is a bit of a challenge. And just, I don't know if this is too technical a point, but this thing about cookies, we've been talking about cookies obviously a lot in the last, it feels like years now. Well, it is years. And what's happening next year, probably. They found a way to make the cookies they drop first party cookies.
I'd say that's a technicality in the sense that it's probably something like the cookie is designed in such a way for it to be processed on your machine locally or something like that. I don't know what the technicalities of it are. I have a feeling it goes back to this customer ID notion, because that's what GA4 is all about. These customer IDs that, you know, when you really dig into it, you can see them. You can see them in the customer exploration report. But what does it mean? How are they used? How is it meaningful? Is tricky to kind of get your head around that, you know?
Well, I mean, it does say, Google themselves say that the particular JavaScript library that's behind GA4, the gtag.js, uses first-party cookies to distinguish unique users as well as unique sessions from a single user. Somehow they've gotten around that.
It looks like a technicality, like not a technical technicality, but
yes,
something more than actually being your standard first-party tracking.
Okay, cool. Well, we won't go too deep into that. I don't want to stray into... I want to get back to the kind of marketing reporting of it, I suppose. All right, here's a question for you. Sean, if Larry and Sergey were here, what would be your top three feature requests? What would you say, guys, these are three things we need in GA4 immediately, please? What are they?
It might be a big ask, but if we could go back to session-backed tracking, that would be appreciated to incorporate that alongside the events. The onus is really on marketers now to kind of be a little bit more not creative in terms of what you kind of want to get out of Google Analytics, but you have to know what you want to get out of Google Analytics. It's not as kind of given to you as it was before with the likes of Universal Analytics with the standard reports. So as Cathal was mentioning around a lot of the kind of technical elements of GA4 setup, a bit more kind of hand-holding could be appreciated in the sense of kind of the digital marketer's use of GA4. The reporting interface as well, even on the exploration side of things. Again, I think as you've mentioned, Cahill, it is a little bit less intuitive in terms of where stuff is. So there could be a little bit of a walkthrough wizard there in terms of the initial kind of use of GA4 reporting. And also just more around the discrepancy values. So depending on the reporting types that you use, there's a certain amount of thresholding depending on the metrics that you're looking at. I believe device type is the only GA4 metric which doesn't have any thresholding when you're looking at the actual amounts of your traffic in GA4. So why? can we try and kind of marry a lot of this up again together instead of just having that one view of device type, which is again customizable by secondary dimensions and segments and stuff like that and the reporting features. But there is a lot of noise in the industry at the moment, even doing a little bit of kind of research about what people are saying in advance of this. There's a lot of, why is this saying this? Why is this saying this? If it could all kind of follow the same sort of rhetoric and the same kind of backing data, that would be good. I know there's a certain PII limitation here with personally identifiable information, but at scale, I don't think that's a massive issue.
No. Right, I think they're pretty sound requests. What about you, Cahill?
I have a very simple request for Larry and Sergey, and that is, let me search by metrics. So within Universal Analytics, you could say, you could log into any report, like your Google Ads report, and you could say, show me all of the campaigns that have a zero revenue, you know? And you would, you know, you'd go, show me everything with zero revenue associated.
I thought I was just being stupid not being able to find that. So that's just not there in GA4, no?
Not in GA4. You can search by dimension. So you can say, show me all my Google Ads campaigns, or show me all of the, you know, all of my device types. But you cannot filter by metric. It's very annoying because now, look, you can download into Excel and you can put in a filter. But, you know, sometimes it's nice to look at it in the UI. So definitely filter by metrics is my top one. The next one that I would like would be, in Universal Analytics, you could put a number of things into events. So you could put in like your event action, your event, you know, three different elements into an event. It was action, label and all that category and action. So I used to put in like the page path into my category. So I could see, well, someone's after clicking the learn more button, but what page were they on? You know, whereas in GA4 events, you can only click, I would have to set up a new event for every single one. Whereas Universal, you just have to do one. You know, so that kind of simplification. And then the last one goes back to what Sean said around thresholding. So the default setup of Google Analytics 4 puts everyone on this blended reporting type. So reporting identity is what it's called. So everyone's automatically on the blended reporting identity, which means that when you go over a certain level, Google kind of gives you sample data, gives you threshold, it cuts off your data. You have to go and manually change that to device based, and it's hidden and it's not easy and no one seems to know about it really, you know.
I think there's, if you open up one of these sections of the setup assistant, it's like this, but the bottom option that's kind of, yeah, for device based. Talk to me about that because I didn't quite get that.
So there's three. It's like observed, blended, and device based. Observed and blended are both liable to thresholding unless you have your customer IDs all hooked up and all of those different things, you know. So it's.
And when you say thresholding, do you mean only processing so many events and.
No, well, it processes all the events, but it doesn't show you them. So, for example, your Google Ads spend might be, if say you spent $20,000 in Google Ads, and you see in Google Ads $20,000, in the same date range, in GA4, you might see $17,000.
Got you, right.
Okay, so what it's doing is it limits the amount of data available to you. So what you have to do is you have to go into your settings, go to your reporting identity. You've got the two options. This is what really annoys me. Two options, observed and blended. And then this other kind of grayed out button that says see all. And when you press see all, then you can change it to device based. And the reality is everyone needs to be on device based unless they've got their customer IDs all hooked up.
Got you.
So, and that's the default option. Your default on the reporting identity that's going to limit the amount of data you see. People have to go and change that after they set it up. So they'd be my three asks. Filters, event data parameters and things like that, and then making sure that the reporting identity was suitable for everyone.
Yeah. I think mine would be, firstly, Google Optimize. Very sad about seeing Google Optimize being sunsetted. And now, I know that wasn't part of GA, but obviously it was reported in GA.
This is a tragedy.
I mean, I honestly thought that like the week after announcing the sunsetting of that, they were going to go, but we've put it into GA4. You know, that was what I obviously thought, well, logically thought was going to happen. And I think I maybe read a rumor on Twitter or some other people thinking that as well. I thought, yeah, obviously. So I would love it if that happened. Imagine that if Google Optimize was made part of GA4, that would be fantastic. I think those shareable templates for explorations or reports, whatever, some way for complete novices to, you know, basically go and look at blog posts about the perfect e-commerce dashboard or exploration and just click it and add it to their account. And I think there's a lot of marketers are never going to build this stuff for themselves. It's just the barrier to entry is too high. It's already quite technical just to start using the thing and set it up. And that's the third thing, I think. I think the onboarding is just does not acknowledge that. I mean, it feels like it's been really created in a real bubble of techie data scientist people and with not a lot of concessions to your average digital marketer who's used to, you know, using things like Canva and, you know, Meta Business Suite, and that's about as technical as they get, right? What are the three most important features of GA4 you think everyone needs to know?
Just first of all, I think it's kind of a bit of an overall observation, but the focus has shifted. It is more user-centric now rather than kind of session-backed, and that kind of falls under the whole event backing of GA4 versus Universal Analytics. So things have changed. I think there are a lot more things that we as kind of marketers need to look at when it comes to GA4 now versus UA, what's kind of given to us versus what we kind of need to dig a little bit more for. And that kind of ties back to the kind of standard reporting. It isn't as customizable or dynamic as before unless you kind of delve into the exploration. So I think people kind of need to make sure that that's a new important feature that they're kind of getting their hands on. And then, yeah, again, the sample sizes. You're not going to get the same sort of 100% tie-up that you would have gotten previously with Universal Analytics when it comes to the data thresholding. So just to kind of become a little bit more comfortable with a little bit less and to kind of make the most out of the new features there as well.
Yeah. And what about you, Cathal? What are the three most important features of GA4 everyone needs to know?
First on explorations, just the freeform explorations. It just is apps. That's a game changer. It's a really, really good way to use data. Data that's just not someone looking at a page, but what do they do on the page? Like the funnel, they watched the video, they left, they came back. They you know, it allows you to use the tool as a way to track humans rather than in a non-linear way. So explorations, first of all. Reporting identity, everyone needs to know how to switch the reporting identity, otherwise they're going to get thresholding. So going into the reporting identity in the sessions, pressing the see all button and then choosing device based, that's the other one. And then, like, I suppose within GA4, the final thing that I think everyone should just become familiar with is comparisons. So comparisons would have been custom segments in Universal Analytics, comparing one aspect to another aspect. The whole thing with data is you're looking at data not in isolation. One part of your analysis versus another part. One channel versus another channel. One time range versus another time range. One country versus another country. To compare data is where you get the insights. So for me, they're the three most important parts of GA4.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And finally, what are a couple of your secret tips? Top secret. They're not going to be secret for much longer. Sean?
Create events for everything. There's a lot of default events in GA4, but make sure you're creating them for what you care about. That can be your different conversion events and making sure they're marked as conversion events. Making sure you're kind of tracking all of that as soon as possible. the shift is coming up on July 1st, and we'll all need to make sure that in particular platforms like Google Ads are receiving the same volume of kind of conversion events that they were previously. So if you're using things like target cost per acquisition, target ROAS, even enhanced CPC bidding models to an extent, make sure those conversion events are being picked up within Google Ads currently, so there's no kind of drop in performance. Use the AI and explore functions there. Try out the LTV stuff if it does work. Get used to kind of looking at those sort of metrics and really just make sure all of that is kind of firing as best it can if you have the significant volume required. And also, not really kind of a secret tip, but just make sure you're kind of creating reports for everything. I don't think the standard interface is kind of in a suitable and satisfactory kind of state at the moment, to be honest. So use the custom reporting feature. You can have up to 150, I believe, in GA4 now. So just make sure you're covering everything that you've had, and also just see what else is available now with the new event dimensions in order to get some more data.
Great. What sort, when you say set up more events, stimulate my imagination, like what sort of things, anything that people click on or interact with in any way, right?
Yeah, so the biggest thing is obviously just the conversion events. So I think by default, a lot of the GA4 default events at the moment will be based on things like your page views, your purchases, your file downloads. For a business like ours, we have 18 different certifications at the moment. So what we might do is create different conversion events for each of those, just so we can kind of track the performance on those across the line. But also, if you have particular subsets of traffic, if there's one killer campaign that you have, whether it's on PPC or whether it's a referral partner or whether it's a particular social channel, look at creating dedicated conversion events for those, just so you don't lose visibility of what's most important to you and your business.
Yeah, love it. Nice one. Cahill, what about you? What are your secret tips?
I have two secret tips, two main secret tips. One of them is a secret dimension. I know that sounds really trippy, doesn't it? Secret dimension. My first secret tip is the library. So the library allows you to create collections, allows you to customize your left-hand menu. So we know in UGA4 that there's not a lot of reports down the left-hand side. So I've mentioned this already, but you know, you can put explorations, you can move reports around, you can rename them. You can make the interface more intuitive by messing around with the collections. That's the first thing. It's found in the library in the bottom left corner. The next thing is my secret dimension. So my secret dimension is page location. Page location is a user scope dimension. So it basically means that you get the full URL. So digitalmarketinginstitute.com/insights/blog/how-to-use-GA4. You know, so you've got these different dimensions in Universal Analytics and GA4. Typically, it would have been page in Universal Analytics. In GA4, it's page string and page title or something like that. It just gives you the subdirectory after the main URL. But page location gives you your full URL. It gives you any subdomains. It gives you anywhere that your URL is kind of showing up. It's not just the subdirectory. So for me, I want to know what pages people are on with the full URL, you know, so I use page location. Because if they're on a subdomain, say it's like courses.digitalmarketinginstitute.com/blog, and then you've got digitalmarketinginstitute.com/blog, that under the directory setup will just come in as /blog. But with page location, you get to see, well, actually, they're on a subdomain. So that's something that I use a lot, actually, is the page location dimension. It's not a default. That's the other thing. Goes back to my ask. The default options aren't always what we want. So it is in there, but you do have to know it exists. So they're my two anyway.
Very cool. Nice one. Well, guys, thanks so much. We are out of time, I'm afraid. And of course, I've only got one more question for you. Just tell our listeners where they can find and connect with you online. Sean?
Yeah, you can find me at LinkedIn. Sean McKenna, Head of Digital Marketing, Digital Marketing Institute.
Yeah, so digitalbasics.com, and you can find me on LinkedIn.
Thanks for listening. And don't forget, you can help us make the podcast even better by completing the survey linked to in the show notes. We'd really appreciate that. And one lucky respondent will win an Amazon voucher. Thanks again. Goodbye.